anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle?
Take a moment to wind down. Breathe in and breathe out, exhaling the days, exhaling any excitement or frantic energy that you might be carrying around. Just shake it off. I don't know if you've ever heard, but in the animal kingdom, of which we are still somehow a part, though it may seem distant at times, they say there's been research that shows after an animal experiences a traumatic event or an event where they've activated their parasympathetic nervous system, their fight or flight mechanisms, they literally shake it off to recover. They literally, you know, move their body and physically shake off that excess energy, that buildup of adrenaline and fear. And I invite you, as you need. I love how somehow our language was able to capture that primordial practice. And I invite you to return to it as you need to wake up, feel refreshed, feel centered in your soul and your spirit and your body, letting go of things that make you small, things that make us small or afraid. Last week, I started reading from book one of the Chronicles of Narnia, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. The version, it says copyright 1950. The copy I have is from 75, but it should still be that first edition. And I'm going to start here. We left off last time with Lucy, who was the first daughter of Eve, of the children, to wander into Narnia through the wardrobe. And she's eating and snacking with some tea at Mr. Tumnus's house. And I'll just play some music in the background to keep us. Relaxed. Is that a good volume of music if I can read over that? Okay. Lucy thought she had never been in a nicer place. It was a little dry, clean cave of reddish stone with a carpet on the floor and two little chairs where she and Mr. Tumnus sat. Mr. Tumnus started to play some gentle music. Lucy said, "Oh, Mr. Tumnus, I'm so sorry to stop you. And I do love that tune. But really, I must go home. I only meant to stay for a few minutes." "It's no good now, you know," said the fawn, laying down his flute and shaking his head very sorrowfully at Lucy. "No good," she said, jumping up and feeling rather frightened. "What do you mean? I've got to go home at once. The others will be wondering what has happened to me." But a moment later, she asked, "Mr. Tumnus, whatever is the matter?" For the fawn's brown eyes had filled with tears, and then the tears began trickling down his cheeks, and soon they were running off the end of his nose, and at last he covered his face with his hands and began to howl. "Mr. Tumnus, Mr. Tumnus, don't, what is the matter? Aren't you well? Tell me what's wrong, Mr. Tumnus." The fawn continued sobbing as if his heart would break. And even when Lucy went over and put her arms around him and lent him her handkerchief, he did not stop. He merely took the handkerchief and kept on using it, wringing it out with both hands whenever it got too wet to be any more use. And so Lucy was presently standing in a damp patch of his tears. "Mr. Tumnus," bawled Lucy in his ear, shaking him, "do stop, stop at once. You ought to be ashamed of yourself, a great big fawn like you. What on earth are you crying about?" Oh, sobbed Mr. Tumnus. "I'm crying because I'm such a bad fawn." "I don't think you're a bad fawn at all," said Lucy. "I think you're a very good fawn. You are the nicest fawn I've ever met." "You wouldn't say that if you only knew." "No, I'm a bad fawn. I don't suppose there ever was a worse fawn since the beginning of this world." "But what have you done?" said Lucy. "My old father, that's his picture over the mantelpiece. He would never have done a thing like this. Taken service under the White Witch. That's what I am. I'm in the pay of the White Witch." Lucy said, "Who is the White Witch? Why is it that she has got all Narnia under her thumb?" "It's she that makes it always winter and never Christmas. Think of that." "How awful," said Lucy. But what does she pay you for? That's the worst of it, said Mr. Tumnus. I'm a kidnapper for her. That's what I am. Look at me, daughter of Eve. Would you believe that I'm the sort of fawn to meet a poor, innocent child in the wood? One that had never done me any harm, and pretend to be friendly with it, and invite it home to my cave, all for the sake of lulling it asleep and then handing it over to the White Witch? No, said Lucy, I'm sure you wouldn't do anything of the sort. But I have, said the fawn. Well, Lucy proceeded rather slowly, for she wanted to be truthful and yet not too hard on him. Well, that was pretty bad, but you're sorry for it, and I'm sure you'll never do it again. Daughter of Eve, don't you understand? It isn't something I have done. It's something I'm doing right now, in this very moment. What do you mean? Cried Lucy, turning white. You are the child. I had orders from the White Witch that if ever I saw a son of Adam or a daughter of Eve in the wood, I was to catch them and hand them over to her. And you are the first I ever met. And I've pretended to be your friend and ask you to tea, and all the time I've been meaning to wait till you are asleep and then go and tell her. But you won't, Mr. Tumnus, you won't, will you? Indeed, you really mustn't. And if I don't, said he, beginning to cry again, she's sure to find out. And she'll have my tail cut off, and my horns sawn off, and my beard plucked out, and she'll wave her hand over my beautiful cloven hoofs and turn them into a horrid, solid hoofs like a wretched horse's. And if she's extra and especially angry, she'll turn me into stone, and I shall be only a statue of a fawn in her horrible house until the four thrones of Cair Paravel are filled, and goodness knows when that will happen, or whether it will ever really happen at all. I'm very sorry, Mr. Tumnus, but please let me go home. Of course I will. Of course I've got to. I see that now. I hadn't known what humans were like before I met you. Of course I can't give you up to the witch, not now that I know you. But we must be off at once. I'll see you back to that lamppost. I suppose you can find your own way there, back to Spare and Wardrobe. I'm sure I can, said Lucy. We must go as quietly as possible. The whole wood is full of her spies. Even some of the trees are on her side. They both got up and left the tea things on the table, and Mr. Tumnus once more put up his umbrella and gave Lucy his arm, and they went out into the snow. The journey back was not at all like the journey to the Fawn's cave. They stole along as quickly as they could, without speaking a word, and Mr. Tumnus kept to the darkest places. Lucy was relieved when they reached the lamppost again. Do you ever know your way from here, daughter of Eve? Lucy looked very hard between the trees, and she could see that distant patch of light that looked just like daylight. Yes, I can see the wardrobe door. Then be off home as quick as you can. And can you ever forgive me for what I meant to do? Why, of course I can, Lucy said. And I do hope you won't get into dreadful trouble on my account. Farewell, daughter of Eve. Perhaps I may keep the handkerchief. Rather, said Lucy, and ran off quickly towards that far-off patch of daylight as quickly as her legs would carry her, crunching through the snow into the wooden boards, jumping through the wardrobe and back into that room, closing the door tightly behind her. I'm here, she shouted. I'm back. Lucy ran out of the empty room into the passage and found the other three. "It's all right," she repeated. "I've come back." "What on earth are you talking about, Lucy?" "Why, haven't you been wondering where I was?" "So you've been hiding, have you? Poor old Lou, hiding and nobody noticed. You'll have to hide longer than that if you want people to start looking for you." "But I've been away for hours and hours." The others all stared at one another. "Batty." "What do you mean, Lou?" "What I said. It was just after breakfast when I went to the wardrobe, and I've been away for hours and hours. I've had tea, and all sorts of things have happened." "Don't be silly, Lucy. We've only just come out of that room a moment ago, and you were there then." "She's not being silly at all," said Peter. "She's just making up a story for fun, aren't you, Lou? And why shouldn't she?" "No, Peter, I'm not," she said. It's a magic wardrobe. There's wood inside it, and it's snowing, and there's a fawn and a witch, and it's called Narnia. Come and see." The others didn't know what quite to think, but Lucy was so excited that they all went back into that room with her. She rushed ahead of them, flung open the door of the wardrobe, and cried, "Now go in and see for yourselves." "Why, you goose," said Susan. "It's just an ordinary wardrobe. Look, there's a back to it." Then everyone looked in and saw the coats, and it looked, just even to Lucy herself, like a perfectly ordinary wardrobe. There was no woods or snow, just a wardrobe with hooks on it. Peter went in and rapped his knuckles on it to make sure that it was solid. "A jolly good hoax, Lou," he said as he came out again. "You really have taken us in. I must admit, we half believed you." "But it wasn't a hoax at all," said Lucy. "Really and truly, it was all different a moment ago. Honestly, it was, I promise." "Come, Lou," said Peter. "That's going to be a bit far. You've had your joke. Hadn't you better drop it now?" Lucy grew fiery red in the house, tried to say something, though she hardly knew what she was going to say, and burst into tears. For the next few days, she was just miserable. She could have made it up, quite like the others thought, but only she didn't. She was a truthful girl, and she knew, really, that she was in the right. She knew that eventually she would be able to open that door and let in some light. Edmund started to get curious. He went into the wardrobe, but he couldn't find the light either. There was no answer, and Edmund noticed that his own voice suddenly did have a curious sound. It wasn't that of a closed wardrobe, but that of a more spacious and endless place. He noticed that suddenly he felt a rather unexpected cold, and then he saw a light. "Thank goodness," said Edmund. "The door of the wardrobe must have swung back open." He forgot all about Lucy and went towards the light, which he thought was the open door of the wardrobe. But instead of finding himself stepping back into that spare room, he found himself stepping out from the shadow of some thick, dark fir trees into an open place in the middle of a wood. There was a crisp, dry snow under his feet, and more snow lying on the branches of the trees. Overhead, there was a pale blue sky, the sort of sky one sees on a fine winter day in the morning. Just beautiful. Straight ahead of him, he saw between the tree trunks the sun just rising, very red and clear. Everything was perfectly still, as if he were the only living creature in that whole country. There was not even a robin or a squirrel among the trees, and the wood stretched as far as he could see in every direction. He shivered. He now remembered that he had been looking for Lucy, and also how unpleasant he had been to her about her imaginary country, which now turned out not to have been imaginary at all. He thought that she must be somewhere quite close, and so he shouted, "Lucy, Lucy, I'm here too. It's Edmund." There was no answer. "She's angry about all the things I've been saying lately." And though he did not like to admit it, he had, in fact, been very, very wrong. He also didn't like being alone in this strange, cold, quiet place. So he shouted again, "Lucy, Lucy, I'm here. I'm sorry I didn't believe you. I see now you were right all along. Do come out. Make it Pax." Still, there was no answer. "Just like a girl," said Edmund, sulking somewhere, "and won't accept an apology." He looked around again and decided he did not much like this place, and he had made up his mind almost to go home when he heard through the very far off wood the sound of bells. He listened, and the sound came nearer and nearer, and at last there swept into a sight a sledge drawn by two reindeer. The reindeer were about the size of a Shetland pony, just smaller than a horse, and their hair was so white that even the snow hardly looked white compared with them. Their branching horns were gilded and shone like something on fire when the sunrise caught them. Their harness was a scarlet leather and covered with bells. On the sledge driving the reindeer sat a fat little dwarf who had been just about 3 feet high if he'd been standing. He was dressed in a polar bear's fur, and his head he wore a red hood with a long gold tassel down from its point. His huge beard covered his knees, served him instead of a rug. And behind him, on a much higher seat, in the middle of the sledge, sat a very different person, a great lady, taller than any woman that Edmund had ever seen. She was also covered in white fur up to her throat and held a long, straight, golden wand in her right hand and wore a golden crown on her head. Her face was white, but not merely pale, but white like snow or paper or icing sugar, except just for her very red mouth. It was a beautiful face in other respects, but proud and cold and stern. The sledge was a fine sight as it came sweeping towards Edmund, with the bells jingling and the dwarf cracking his whip and the snow flying up on each side of it. "Stop," said the lady, and the dwarf pulled the reindeer up so sharp that they almost sat down. Then they recovered themselves and stood chomping at their bits and blowing in the frosty air. The breath coming out of their nostrils looked like smoke. "And what, pray, are you?" said the lady, looking hard at Edmund.
My name's
Edmund," he said rather awkwardly. He did not quite like the way she looked at him. The lady frowned. "Is that how you address a queen?" she asked, looking sterner than ever.
I beg your pardon, your majesty. I didn't know," said Edmund.
"Not know the Queen of Narnia?" cried she. "Ha! You shall know us better hereafter. But I repeat, what are you?"
"Please, your majesty," said Edmund, I don't know what you mean. I'm at school, at least I was. It's the holidays now."
"But what are you?" said the queen again. "Are you a great overgrown dwarf that has cut off its beard?"
"No, your majesty. I never had a beard. I'm a boy."
"A boy," she said. "Do you mean you are son of Adam?"
Edmund stood still, saying nothing. He was too confused by this time to understand what the question meant.
"I see you are an idiot. Whatever else you may be," said the queen, "answer me once and for all, or I shall lose my patience. Are you human?"
"Yes, your majesty," said Edmund. And how, pray, did you come to enter my dominions?
Please, your majesty, I came in through a wardrobe.
A wardrobe? What do you mean?
I opened a door and just found myself here, your majesty, said Edmund.
Ha! Said the queen, speaking more to herself than him. A door from the world of men. I have heard of such things. This may wreck all, but he is only one and easily dealt with. Next week, we'll see what exactly the White Queen means when she says that she'll deal with Edmund. We're on to a new chapter called Turkish Delight. And I can assure you, if you've never had Turkish Delight, you will soon grow to love it and be very, very curious about what Turkish Delight is. Unlike the land of Narnia, which, who knows, maybe we just have yet to stumble in through that wardrobe, Turkish Delight can be found in such markets as Pike Place. I hope you all were able to enjoy some of our trip together this evening into Narnia, that you've spent some good time writing your postcards, and that you are winding down, ready for your next 2 days of this week. Remember always to keep your imaginations growing and your minds open, curious to where they might lead. Have a good night, everyone.